Welcome to 1202, the Human Factors Podcast. The podcast that covers all things about humans, technology, and particularly the bit in between.
Welcome to this episode of 1202, the Human Factors Podcast. Today, we're venturing back into the world of cybersecurity and particularly a bit of focus on human vulnerability. You'll see that I'm not in my local office, and actually, I feel like I'm quite low in my chair, so you'll just have to put up with that for those of you who are watching. Those of you who are listening, you won't notice any difference. But before we get into the actual episode, just a couple of reminders that the Chartered Institute of Ergonomics and Human Factors annual general meeting, yes, that very exciting part of the year, is happening on the 15th of April, where I'm going to hand over the reins of the presidency to Dr. Mark Young, and we'll get to see who has been elected to which roles. And whilst I guess a lot of us can be quite jokey around the AGM, for those of you who are members, I can't stress importantly enough that yes, it's a piece of formality, it's a piece of stuff that maybe people aren't that interested in, but this is your institute. It's only going to do the things that you wanted to do. So your participation in the AGM is just to hear what's been going on and what people have been doing on your behalf, I think is really important. Now, I encourage all members to get involved in the voting. So there are some roles up for where people have put themselves forward, and we're going to be voting for those roles. So when the email lands in your inbox, again, don't just delete it. Don't do it later. Have a quick look. Read the candidate descriptions and what they put forward to you. And please do get involved and vote. After the AGM, the following week is the Ergonomics and Human Factors 2024 conference. So tickets are still available for that, and they are going fast, but there's still some there. I'm looking forward to going there and catching up with people, and if you are there, you are going, do come and say hello. I'm going to be around from the Monday to the Wednesday, and it'll be great to put faces to names and just to catch up and meet new people. Anyway, back to today's episode. I met today's guest be over a year ago now, when we were both giving a human factors careers perspectives to students at Cardiff University. And I was really taken and really enjoyed her insights into the practical challenges of cybersecurity. And therefore, I thought it'd be fab to see if she'd come on the podcast. And I asked her there and then, would you be willing to do so? And I was delighted when she said yes, pretty much straight away. Unfortunately, because of my administration and bad planning and all that sort of stuff, then it's taken me this long to be able to get us both in the same place or virtually in the same place at the same time. But I'm pleased that I finally got my act together now. And it's a pleasure to welcome Laura Bishop to the podcast. So, Laura, welcome. And thank you for putting up with me and making it here.
No problem at all.
So for those of you not familiar with you and what you do, can you just give us a bit of insight into what your current role is and what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, absolutely. So I lead the human-centric cybersecurity research program at Airbus within the cybersecurity innovation team. So my key role is organizing the research program in relation to current, perhaps novel or future, maybe 5, 10, 20 years looking into the future, concerns when it comes to cyber risk. The main things that we tend to look at is what makes a human vulnerable to a cyber attack, how cyber criminals then further exploit those vulnerabilities, and interventions to try and reduce those vulnerabilities. We tend to look across a number of key themes, such as artificial intelligence and humans' interaction with that, human augmentation, so how we can human and machine team, and synthetic media, so your phishing, your deepfakes, and so on. And our research tends to not just be internally, but we also work with universities all over the world, and small to large industry partners.
So not a lot then, you're just basically saving the world at the moment.
That is how it feels sometimes. I do have a fantastic team around me. So in innovation, we are all slightly different. So there's two to three of us that work on the human factor side of things, but we have diverse skill sets across technology, engineering, and so on. So I have lots and lots of support.
Brilliant. So that sounds like really fascinating. We're going to dive into that. But how did you get involved in human factors in the first place? What's your origin story?
So I did an undergraduate psychology degree. I had 18 plus years before that experience in operations management for sales and marketing companies. Thought I would dip my toe into psychology because it was of interest to me and completely forgot that anything I have a go at, I have to excel in. So before I knew it, I had a first degree, won the British Psychological Society Award for the highest mark, and ended up getting my final year paper on human interaction with social robots published.
Cool.
During that time, I also worked with Professor Phil Morgan, who I think you may have on in the future. I worked with him on the cybersecurity, it wasn't cybersecurity at the time, it was just on autonomous vehicles, so human interaction with autonomous vehicles. And I just found a real love for it, really, knowing that it's the thing of the future, and that perhaps, certainly at the time, the way humans interact with those forms of technology was under-researched.
Cool. And so you've done that that bit of stuff, and that's whet your appetite. How do you go from there to then doing all this basically the cybersecurity for Airbus? What's been the journey?
So after my undergrad degree, I got offered two PhD studentships, one with the Bristol Robotics Laboratory, and one was with Cardiff University, which was the position that I took. And that was actually originally looking at cybersecurity of connected vehicles. And I followed Professor Phil Morgan to Cardiff University. He was actually my PhD supervisor. After about 3 months of completing my whole literature review, I was offered a two to three months secondment at Airbus to look at perhaps more end users and what made them vulnerable to cyber attacks within a large organization like Airbus. Thankfully, they loved me and they said, "Will you change your PhD completely to suit us?" And I said, "Absolutely." So I left the connected vehicles behind and worked for the next 4 years on my PhD, looking at the employee experience in cybersecurity and how we can mitigate risk insofar as that. And I have now completed and passed my PhD.
Well done. How terrifying must it have been when somebody turns around to you and says, "You know, you're on the rails for this PhD. Can you just change it completely to suit us?" Was that a nice challenge to have, or how did that make you feel?
It was amazing. It was a difficult decision because it was stepping away from the robotic side of it that I'm quite passionate about. Because originally I thought, well, connected and probably connected autonomous vehicles, that's of interest to Airbus, surely. But actually, when we went to look at where we needed to start when it came to the research, when it came to human vulnerabilities and cybersecurity, you've got to kind of start at the beginning and look at the end users working on the computers every day and what was making them vulnerable, particularly when something like phishing is one of the largest cyber attacks that will perhaps reach the human. It was a bit of a difficult decision, but yeah, in the end I just decided to join them. And after completing my PhD, I did go and work for a cybersecurity vendor for a year as their director of behavioral science, but Airbus did ask if I would return, and here I am running the research program that I originally did my PhD with.
So that clearly you didn't do anything wrong and they very much like you, and therefore history was made.
And I very much like them. It's a major, amazing organization to work with.
Brilliant. That's been fantastic. Right. I really want to dive into the human piece around cyber. So we're going to take a really quick break and then we're going to dive straight into that.
You are listening to 1202, the Human Factors Podcast. We wanted to take the opportunity to say thank you for your support. You can help further by rating us through your podcast provider, sharing us through social media, and telling your friends and colleagues. Let's work together in raising awareness of the value in putting users at the center of what we do.
Hi, and welcome back. And we're here with Laura Bishop talking about cybersecurity and putting the human at the center of that. Now, Laura, most people who listen to this podcast, I think, are human factors practitioners one way or another. So I think it is the natural home for us to be thinking of the human in it when we're looking at technology, but not everyone is. So we always talk about the human being the weakest link in cybersecurity. What, given that there's, you know, the bad people in this domain and just at the other end of a computer, why is it humans are the weakest link?
So yeah, for some time, the human was seen as the weakest link in cybersecurity. Then the message was, that's not the case. They can actually be the strongest link. But I'm not sure whether many people, particularly outside of the industry, understand what we mean when we say the weakest, the strongest link. Yeah. So the human limitations when it comes to cybersecurity are actually, first off, their strengths in everyday life. So those things that make us really vulnerable, so it might be the fact that humans spend, they say, 95% of their time working in unconscious or heuristic mode. That works for us most of the time in any other situation. Yeah. If we're deciding what food to have when we're choosing our dinner on an evening, choosing something that we ate yesterday or something that we saw a nice picture of in a magazine, that kind of heuristic might work. Sometimes it can end in error, but it's not a big deal because you just look forward to the next meal. But in cybersecurity, those errors, and in healthcare and some other domains as well, can actually have a very big consequence within healthcare. If a nurse, as an example, gives a prescription to somebody in hospital that was the prescription they had yesterday and it's changed, that can have a big impact. And it's the same in cybersecurity, because if somebody makes an error, like clicks on a malicious link in a phishing email, that can have a big financial impact and so on for the individual and the organization. But as I said, those unconscious heuristics actually make us also really productive at work. So that's if we spend every single moment of the day looking at emails and trying to deliberate over them consciously, it's going to perhaps cost an organization as much because we're not being as productive. Yeah. So it is a human strength. It's just that in some situations, it can be a weakness when it comes to cybersecurity. And the other aspect is that you've got people attacking you with it. So cyber criminals are aware of all of those weaknesses and are constantly trying to make you fall into those errors wherever possible so that you succumb to the attack that they're delivering to you. And the other thing I really want to mention as well is the lowest number, I think, that I've seen of the heuristics that may ever, when it comes to cybersecurity, is around 150. We know there's 7 to 8 that are very specifically targeted in phishing. So it's very difficult for any human to not only be aware that they've moved into that unconscious mode and that perhaps they're more vulnerable, but then actually be aware of these rules of thumb that they've learned all across their lifetime. So I always bring up an example of like the authority principle, which is a heuristic that we use, where when we're born, we're told to listen to our parents, the police, teachers, and so on. And then what organizations say to employees is, but when it comes to phishing emails, if it's from the CEO, ignore it. And that's really hard for a human to do.
It's really interesting as well, because the base keeps on changing. The phishing emails get cleverer and cleverer. And just when we think we're on top of it, so I run my own consultancy and try and train my team or have a culture of sharing around, look, I've just been sent this is clearly a phishing email, but I got one the other day that was just so involved that I was like, whoa, is this a and I was sat there myself going, is this a phishing email or is this a genuine mistake made by somebody else, things like that. So that the base is constantly shifting, therefore you must have to keep on shifting your mental model in what you're doing.
Yeah, so what's actually interesting is the sort of attack methods, the cognitive heuristics that are attacked by the cyber criminals don't tend to change. So we've analyzed across the last 10 years, looking at the trends when it comes to those social engineering strategies. A couple of them may chop and change, but actually your authority, your scarcity or your urgency tend to stay at the top. What actually changes is the context or the way in which they're delivered. So it used to be that curiosity, so humans don't like having a gap in knowledge. If there's a gap in knowledge, they have to try and fill it wherever possible. And cyber criminals know that. So they will try and make you feel curious when they deliver the phishing email to you. Now, it used to be they'd just send a quick and dirty link. Because we're curious, we'll click on it. Now, the context has changed because we've got things like shared files that say things like staff salaries. Who's not going to want to click on that and see what that says in an organization, you know? So it's those contexts that we have to try and keep up with. And that takes analyzing thousands of phishing emails each year.
Wow. Do you think that the, obviously on the side of the good people like yourself, you know, all that you're doing, all of this research, all of this in-depth study and this analysis that you've just alluded to, do you think the people who are doing the other side of that, so the bad people, they're going to as much depth in terms of assessing the way that they're delivering these things, or are they just chucking loads of stuff out there and just seeing what sticks?
I mean, it's very difficult to know, isn't it? But I certainly think there's a continuum. I think there are some people that probably just follow what's come before, because as I say, those principles tend not to change. I think most people know that that urgency in an email or the email from the CEO is kind of a thing. But I do believe that when it comes to things like whaling, when they're targeting high up people in organizations, or when they're targeting particular departments like financial departments that hold the purse strings, there is a lot that they do know. They're probably more astute in the psychology of it than maybe many psychologists. It's their bread and butter at the end of the day.
So with all that in mind, then, what should we be doing differently, do you think?
So when I was saying earlier about those weaknesses or those things that, about a human that become weak when we talk about cybersecurity, we do need to talk about those strengths as well, but be aware of the weaknesses. So we know that humans are bound when it comes to cognition. So they have limited memory. They have limited ways in which that they can make decisions because of those limits. Mm-hmm. They can also be very innovative, creative, thinking real time. Technology are much better at some of those things that we're weak at. So they don't have to take holidays, get sick. They've got unlimited memory to some degree, but they can't yet be creative and innovative. So it's about teaming those two things together and saying, right, humans are not going to change. They haven't changed for all of these thousands, millions of years. I do apologize for my son walking in the background there. hundreds and thousands of years. So we know that that's not going to change. Let's take those elements of positivity and let's team it up with the technology and make sure that we augment to the humans so that they can become the best they can possibly be when it comes to fighting against cyber attacks.
Cool. So one of the things that I've heard you mention before is around this idea about human-centered risk. And I think lots of people are probably knowledgeable about, you know, doing RADOS or risk assessments. Every company does a risk assessment now. You have to have it, and every, you know, being asked to do risk assessments all the time. What do you see the difference being with a human-centered risk? What's the difference with that?
So when we talk about human-centered risk, what we're really talking about is putting human in the center. Let's start with that. What we're really talking about is, particularly moving forward, making sure that we design things to those elements of the human that are as they are. As I say, they haven't changed across time. Yeah. It's easier to build the technology to adapt to the human than it is to adapt the human to the technology. So we know with something like email, if we were to design email now, we wouldn't design it as it currently is. It's just a huge repository of information from multiple sources that just gets dumped on us. And us as humans are supposed to be able to deal with that. And that's just impossible. So we would definitely design it differently. And in some ways we are now. But because technology tends to be incremental, it tends to go the way that best fits perhaps what makes money or what fits organizations or the people that develop them at the time. So human-centered design is about thinking right at the beginning, and that's what people are trying to do now when it comes to AI. There's perhaps we should have done more so earlier on, but everyone's understanding now that in 10, 20, 30 years, we know where artificial intelligence is going to go, and we haven't yet drilled down to the ethics of it, who's responsible for some aspects of artificial intelligence, how it becomes more transparent to the human, so that if a cyber attack is happening, how the hell is a human supposed to know that an attack's taking place when they don't understand AI itself? Mm-hmm. So we're starting to consider those risks and creating the new technology by design with the human in mind. And so that's the way that we need to move forward, knowing what we know now about technology.
You mentioned about AI, and obviously it's very popular at the moment with the likes of ChatGPT, and everybody's terrified that ChatGPT is just going to take over the world because of the way it's perceived in the press, especially if you're not necessarily au fait with the detail about different types of AI and things like that. How much of a risk is AI to cybersecurity right now as opposed to 30, 40 years in the future?
It's as much of a risk as it is a benefit now, and it will be in the future. It will certainly be a larger risk in the future if things aren't changed and thought about and considered now, because AI will be applied to pretty much every aspect of our life. And those things that we put towards protecting ourselves in cybersecurity. So some of those things when we're talking about human augmentation or perhaps utilizing the biometrics that we use now by tracking our steps to maybe tell us when we're feeling stressed and so on, and may moving to that less conscious mode. So maybe at more risk of attack, those things, as much as they will benefit, will also create more openings for attack maybe in the future. Right now, the biggest issue, as I say, is around building the trust now to support the benefits that it brings in the future, but not therefore building so much trust that everything that AI spits out at you, you believing. And that's a concern now, but will become so much more in the future.
So we need to still have a healthy dose of skepticism of what it produces.
Yes. So a lot of the research that I'm doing now is focusing on that.
Cool. So obviously you're working for a very large company, but the cybersecurity issues are there for both small and large companies, micro SMEs all the way up to multinationals. What are the challenges that I guess are similar, but what are the challenges that are different as well for each based on the size of the companies?
So they say with the statistics that the kinds of attacks that are problematic for small and large companies tend to be the same to a degree. So phishing, I think if you look at the statistics, it's slightly more of a problem for smaller organizations, but it's around the 50-50 mark. The biggest challenge, I think, is more about how we intervene, how that intervention is experienced by the human, and how easy it is to deliver them that intervention. So in a large organization, you may have the finance and the people and the skills to provide more education, decision-making support systems, but it can be much more difficult to deploy because it's a large organization. You also in a larger organization have issues like the bystander effect where, oh, it's IT's problem, or there's a cybersecurity team, or somebody else will report that phishing email, I don't need to. Mm-hmm. And in a smaller organization, it is more about that general lack of understanding because they may not have anybody that has an understanding of cybersecurity risk.
Yeah. No, I think that's, and they're both very human problems, aren't they? Because it does, you know, if you don't have the knowledge to deal with something, then you can't. But then also if you don't have the knowledge and know that there's somebody else that you can effectively slope a shoulder it off to, it make it somebody else's problem because we're all busy. We've all got our day jobs to do. And I always feel that this is still seen as a very much of a bolt-on as an extra to the day job and not actually integrated into everybody's day job. I don't know whether you find a similar finding.
Absolutely. And the big challenge when it comes to cybersecurity for the general end user is motivation around it, like you say, because as humans, we are mostly driven by intrinsic motivation. So that's behaviors that we find really enjoyable or pleasurable. We have interest in. Cybersecurity is never going to be that for most people. So it's like, right, what do you do? People do bring in gamification, but that's more gamification around motivating them to complete the training rather than going and transferring the skill perhaps during their working day. So what you have to do is try and get the best form of extrinsic motivation that you can get, and that is by educating employees on the true value in trying to protect the organization from cybersecurity and them understanding what the threat landscape really looks like. Because as humans, we are naturally optimistic. This is one of those biases that I was talking about, where we would be so anxious we wouldn't actually be able to survive in society if we were realistic perhaps about some of the risks. So we have to be optimistic and say, right, we're less susceptible to that risk than everybody around us. And we also find that when it comes to organizations, so you will also think your organization is less at risk. And if an attack does happen, it'll be the person sat next to you, not you. So you really have to try and find the sweet spot between reducing that optimism bias, but not actually making them so anxious they just don't want to open emails, work with technology, or trust AI, you know.
I guess it goes back to that risk balance, isn't it? It's the, you've got, if you just stay at home all the time, as you quite rightly say, you're not going to do anything. So I guess the final question in this will be, if you had a magic wand or could just by the click of your fingers solve one part of this problem, what part of cybersecurity would you fix?
Okay, two quick answers to that. The first one is, what issue in cybersecurity would I fix? Phishing, because anybody that works in cybersecurity is sick of the word. it's one of those things. Do we have to keep researching it? Yes, we do, because it's still an issue. And it is the biggest issue when it comes to humans. So that would be the type of attack I would certainly want to fix. But generally speaking, it would be about organizations understanding the limitations of their employees and what they're actually asking of them, and whether what they're asking is actually suitable. So some of the awareness and education around, say, deep fakes, which is an issue and definitely going to be more of an up and coming issue, is perhaps that there might be some blur around the face and to keep an eye for that. But then we have to think, well, how do humans actually analyze a face? Well, do they analyze the features first, which I think they do, which is the nose, the eyes, and so on. They've already taken in that is the person they think it is before they can actually look at the blur around the face. So is that really fair, what we're asking? And so with that understanding, organizations must consider what technical interventions they can bring in first, so the human doesn't even have to think about it. Mm-hmm. Then what organizational interventions we can bring in. So if we're worried about authority in a phishing email, tell everybody the CEO will never email you and find some other way for the CEO to communicate. Don't leave that again to the human, and only leave to the human what is absolutely necessary. And then you may have some chance for them to be able to hold that within their cognition.
Brilliant. That sounds like some fantastic advice anyway for any company to take on board. Right. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to get back into chat about the final three.
Before Barry gets to the final three, my name's Nick Rome. Let me tell you about this. Technology in our world is evolving at a phenomenal pace, and keeping up with what that means in the human factors world can be challenging. That's where Human Factors Cast comes in. Human Factors Cast is a weekly podcast that highlights and breaks down stories that are chosen by you, the Human Factors community.
New York State is giving out hundreds of robots as companions for the elderly.
Buttons in cars are safer and quicker to use than touchscreen.
A prototype just achieved a major milestone that actually fits the description of a flying car.
The show provides perspective based on experiences from different domains and different industries. We even cover some of the hottest conferences in the field.
On this episode, we're recapping EHF, Ergonomics and Human Factors Conference,
Neuroergonomics Conference,
Human Factors and Ergonomics Society,
UXPA International.
Join me, Nick Rome.
And me, Barry Kirby.
Every Friday morning when Human Factors Cast drops on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. And remember,
it depends.
And now I'm going to send it back over to Barry for the final three.
Brilliant. We're here with Laura, and we're going to get into the final three questions now. So, Laura, do you have a book or a paper that is like a Bible to you, something that that you constantly keep on going back to? Could be technical, could be fiction. Is there what is your go-to reference of all time?
I would be lying if my reference wasn't Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman and the book Nudge. But outside of that, because I think most people that have a similar job to me would probably say the same, is my general psychology books from my original degree, because that's what makes me different. When we come to the table and we're talking about cyber risk, it's that knowledge, like the deepfake example, where I can pick something up from perhaps my degree or my PhD that I've read, and I can bring that into onto the table when we're considering how we support the human. So my original introduction to psychology book, definitely.
Brilliant. If you could go back to any point in your career, early days, or an age that suits you, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Well, the only thing I really can say is trust the process. I'd probably say it's been a long road. I'm a single mum to three kids. I've worked full time all the way through my education. So there's a lot of times I probably would have wanted to give up, but I didn't. So yeah, it would just be like, relax, chill, trust the process. If you work hard, you get there in the end.
Fab. Now go the other way. You're going to retire. You're looking back fondly on your career. What do you like to be remembered for?
So psychology has often been, particularly in domains like cybersecurity, a hidden secret in some ways. We often reinvent the wheel in cybersecurity and not go back to the hundreds of research that came in psychology before. So anyone that knows or works with me will know that the thing for me is making psychological theory and knowledge accessible to everybody. It can be complicated to understand, but quite often I'll take six theories and explain it in a very short amount of time by bringing them all together. So yeah, it's making it accessible and understandable to everybody, because you don't want your cybersecurity experts to be also expert in psychology. You want them to be able to do their job. They just need to know enough of the psychology to be able to support them. So it's bringing that knowledge to them. That's how I want to be remembered.
Fantastic. Laura, it's been an absolute pleasure to be able to chat to you around this, and for you to be able to unveil, I think, some of these, I guess, the mysteries around human involved in cybersecurity and actually make it real in a way that I don't think we've had before. If people want to get in touch with you and chat further with you about this, et cetera, how would they be able to get in touch?
Yeah, contact me through my LinkedIn. That would be great. Please feel free to connect with me. It's always good to meet new people and discuss new topics with people. So feel free.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Thank you. And thank you all for listening and watching. Wherever you're consuming this, please do drop a comment, drop a share, drop a like. Give us your feedback around what you thought of this episode and the episodes in general. And hopefully we will see you on the next episode. So bye for now.
Thank you for listening to 1202, the Human Factors Podcast. Please do get in touch with your thoughts, questions, and comments. You can contact us on social media, such as Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at 1202 Podcast. See you next time. And remember, it's more than just common sense.